Welcome to the Plain English Attorney Podcast. I'm your host, Jeffrey G. Marsacci, and I'm an attorney, certified Medicaid planner, and author by trade. But I've been told that my biggest strength is to boil down complicated legal issues into plain English. In this podcast, I'll cover a wide array of legal, financial, and current event issues relevant to today's busy listener. It's my goal to make the complex more simple for you so you can get on to what is important to you in your life. Please make sure to check out the links in the podcast description. And as always, please subscribe and comment. Hi, Jeff Marsacci, and today we are going to talk about a very important topic, which means this may go a little bit longer than usual. It's the importance of trust funding. Now, many of our estate planning clients have chosen to use a revocable living trust as a way to avoid probate for their estate as much as possible when they pass on. Unfortunately, just having the documents set up is not enough to avoid probate. The process of trust funding, meaning retitling assets or changing beneficiaries, to make sure this all kind of works in conjunction with the trust and the overall plan, has to be an ongoing process. Again, ongoing. It's not I signed the documents once and it's done, because as assets change, the new assets also have to be titled properly or have the correct beneficiary's name to make the whole thing work together. In order to make sure the trusts are and remain properly funded, our office takes several steps. In some cases, our clients are already working with experienced financial advisors who are trained in trust planning when we put together their legal documents. And those advisors are taking the lead in making sure that those trusts are properly funded. In those cases, go ahead and contact that financial advisor about the status on your accounts and make sure. In those cases where there isn't a financial advisor who has been specifically trained in trusts and therefore they're not taking the lead in trust funding, which actually, unfortunately, is most of our cases, our office is taking a couple of steps, several steps, to make sure that our clients know and understand proper trust funding on an ongoing basis so that they can properly fund their own trust. I know I've got a script here. This is something that we send out to our clients by email or as part of our newsletter twice a year, just to emphasize the importance of it. And almost without fail, we have clients that come in, it's been 6 or 7 years, and a third to a half of their assets are all different, and they never took these new assets in the name of their trust, or they didn't coordinate the beneficiaries the right way. And just to give a story, it's been several years, but one of the bigger banks, I'm not going to mention, Bank of America, and a couple of others, they were going to institute a $5 a month ATM charge whether you used the ATM to withdraw cash or not. That was an extremely short-lived thing, because a lot of my clients said, I'm not paying for something like that that I'm not using, not $5 a month. And there was this mass exodus of pulling all that money out and going to other banks. And so, of course, for that whole next year, when we were having annual meetings with the clients who do come in every year, so do you still have this account here? Oh, no. Well, we got upset with them and we moved our money. Well, did you set up the new bank accounts in the name of the trust? Oh, we didn't do that. So we're catching this. But sometimes, like I said, clients don't come back for 6 or 7 years to make an update. And it's only then that they realize, hey, a third to half or more of their assets are no longer where they were when we started, and it's not coordinated with the trust plan. So one of the things that we do is we put together trust funding recommendations. So it's a standard part of our trust planning process. We have a confidential financial analysis form. Just a nice way of saying, look, we want you to list your assets, and it's broken out in section by the type of asset. Now, sometimes our clients, when they're working with a financial advisor, the advisor's just going to send us all that relevant information. And sometimes the list only covers the assets that the financial advisor is controlling. We need to make sure we have all of those assets, because while a financial advisor may be helping you oversee the big stuff, having $50,000 in a savings account outside of what your financial advisor is controlling is still a lot of money. And you still want to make sure that that's taken care of. So when we then conduct a specific separate meeting as a part of this trust setup process, and I run through a whole bunch of stories, and I just, in order to jog people's memory and make sure that we're not missing anything. So when we put together our list of written recommendations, everything is there. So they have a list of recommendations, and what we do is we have in one column, it's a spreadsheet, here's the account. Second column, who owns it? Third column, what's the recommendation we're making? In other words, does this need to be transferred into the name of the trust? Do we need to change the beneficiaries to something? And we list what those beneficiaries are. So this spreadsheet covers all of it. So we'll put all of that together after that funding meeting and just send it out to the clients so they have that, quote, homework list. Now, the one thing that no one should ever try to handle on their own are real estate deeds. That's something that you just need to have an attorney do. Now, we do a lot of deeds for our clients because we're in North Carolina. They have North Carolina real estate. That's not a problem. When our North Carolina clients have South Carolina property, okay, we need to have an attorney that's licensed in South Carolina to do that. It sometimes ends up being a pain, but yeah, the requirements are definitely, depending on the states, they're different enough that you don't want an attorney licensed outside that state to handle any kind of real estate deed, even the simple ones that we use called quitclaim deeds. All right, second thing, we actually will offer trust funding services. In other words, we'll handle it. It's not a standard part of the fees for setting everything up, and it is a significant amount more to hire us to do that trust funding. In fact, it's pretty much double. Now, why is it so much money for us to do it? It's because these institutions don't want to talk to us. And so we have to put in the latest estimate was maybe 6 to 8 times as many hours just trying to get the proper paperwork, because they don't want to deal with us. They want to deal with their clients. So for us to handle that, it's going to be a costly thing. Now, most of our clients don't do that because they like that we have everything listed in the spreadsheet and they can work with their own financial people, go down to their own bank once all the COVID stuff is over, or they can make appointments to go down and they can handle it. So we're doing a good job with giving that checklist, that homework list for them to do, but we will offer to do that. So our engagement agreement does specifically state, hey, we're not responsible for funding your trust unless you pay us separately. And even then, you still do have the responsibility to come in and sign the paperwork. Most of the time, our clients just say, well, for that amount of money. I'll talk to my banker. I'll handle it myself. And that's fine. That's fine. All right. Third thing we do. Annual meetings. These are so critical. We highly recommend that our clients meet with us annually, or if they feel they need it more often, just to run through things. Now, a majority of our time in those meetings is usually spent reviewing the accounts again to make sure that everything is done correctly. Now, don't feel bad. It's a very commonplace thing when people come in for their first annual meeting after getting all the documents signed, having the funding meeting, and running through, here's what you need to do, that very little, if anything, has actually gotten done. In fact, I'd probably guess that more of our clients get most of the funding of their trust done more than a year after. It's after that first annual meeting that they go, okay, yeah, we got to get our butt in gear and we got to get this done. Okay. So we review the assets, go through things, see what assets were added, what did they get rid of, like those bank accounts. Oh, we switched banks. How are they titled? What's the recommendation? So we'll go through that. And again, sometimes it's 6 or 7 years between meetings. In those annual meetings, we're also going to see if there are any updates for their documents, talk about tax laws and changes. But when it comes to funding the trust, usually that takes up a good amount of that annual meeting just to make sure. And usually we're offering a greatly discounted rate compared to my regular hourly rate, just so that the clients don't look at that cost as an impediment to coming in and just to make sure. It would be like, you know, if an auto dealership were charging $1,200 to change the oil and do a quick checkup. No, it's specifically kept low to avoid problems down the road. Now, another thing that we do and we offer for our clients, we have a peace of mind plan where people can pay an annual fee and it's going to come with a complete update of all their documents once per year, unlimited phone call consultations regarding estate planning, probate, even Medicaid planning. We'll answer the questions by phone, or honestly, if it seems something that's a little more involved and they want to come in, okay, we're usually fine with that. That annual asset and document review meeting is included, and so therefore it's free. So we encourage those peace of mind clients, yes, come in and let's sit down and go through it. We'll also handle any of the North Carolina quit claim deeds if they purchase new property or they need a transfer. They just have to pay the filing fee that goes along with it. The other thing, just to help out with kids or even grandkids, you know, ages 18 to 25, if they need those basic documents put in place, if they're peace of mind clients, we're just going to go ahead and get them started with that one time. But we'll get the kids or the grandkids started with those documents. So the program is probably the best way to ensure that the investment our clients have already made is in a revocable trust plan is going to continue to be effective over the years. Now, unfortunately, despite all of our efforts, some of our clients, they don't follow up. They don't do the annual offers to meet. And unfortunately, we just see this too often. 6, 7, 8, 9 years go by, and the next contact we have with clients, despite them getting the monthly emailed newsletter, despite annual mailings saying, hey, it's time for your annual meeting, people pass on and the kids come to us and we find out a lot of the trust wasn't funded for some reason or another. They just didn't do it. Unfortunately, it then means that there's probate around those assets, or the assets are going someplace they didn't necessarily want them to go. It wasn't coordinated with the plan, and it ends up being a much more of an expensive mess and headache for the family to deal with later. Now, we try to do everything we can to make sure that this isn't something that happens, but it does. So we can't really force people to come and meet with us. I do remember one instance. The mom was very sick. The daughter was the trustee. She was there for the planning. 5-6 years had gone by. And then the daughter called about every 6 months for about 2.5 years. Oh, mom's doing a little bit worse each time. I just want to make sure everything's in order. And for each and every meeting, I was saying, did you follow the funding instructions? Is the trust funded? And she said, yes, everything's in the trust. Okay. The questions then started to turn to, my mom's not necessarily competent. Now I'm the trustee, but I need to make sure everything's okay. I'm getting a divorce from my spouse. I need to make sure they're not going to get anything. Yes, that's written in the document, but again, I need to make sure. Is everything in the trust? Oh, yes, everything's in the trust. Well, mom passed away. I end up on the phone call about a week later. Okay, well, everything's in the trust. But the guy, the advisor handling the account says this has to go through probate. Well, then your advisor doesn't know what they're doing because this account's in the trust. And then she said, well, what exactly do you mean by in the trust? She hadn't done anything. Nothing. The only thing that was in the trust was the house because we handled the deed. And the other thing was all of the personal possessions and furniture and all that collective loose stuff that doesn't have titled accounts or ownership papers to it, that was already part of the trust. That what got handled day one when everything got signed. But she didn't follow through with any of the other things, and now most of her assets ended up becoming part of the probate process. So we do everything we can to try to help our clients make sure that the trusts are funded. Now, let me talk a little bit just about why revocable trusts avoid probate. It's because you're setting up this kind of separate entity. You're setting, usually if it's your plan, you're setting yourself up as the trustor, creating it. You're the trustee. You're the first level beneficiary. So essentially, it's just kind of like slapping a label on these accounts and these assets, saying, yes, it's owned by the trust, but I'm still keeping 100% control of everything. If you think about it like a corporation where you are the only shareholder, the only corporate officer, you're the only member on the board of directors, you control everything. It's all yours. But is the bank account in your name? No, it's in the name of the corporation. How about the storefront? No, it's not in your name, it's in the name of the corporation. Well, what about all of the inventory and all that? Well, it's not in your name. It's in the name of the corporation. It's the same thing with the trust. If it's in the name of the trust, probate's only going to grab hold of what is in the individual deceased person's name to take it through that court process. If it's titled in the name of the trust, it doesn't have to go through that process. So the whole funding of the trust is, let's make sure it's all coordinated, titled in the name of the trust, working with the trust. So we try to put out these materials. Like I said, we send it to our clients about every 6 months. We always want to stress the importance of the ongoing work. This is when, as your assets changes, life changes, you want to make sure that you're staying on top of what you have and making sure that it's coordinated with the trust in order for it to avoid probate. Honestly, for most of our clients, the easiest thing is, get the annual meeting together and just go ahead and do it. You know, it's the same thing as if you have a financial advisor and they're going to have an annual meeting. You don't skip it. You go, because it's the best way to stay on top of things. Everything else can be discussed at that meeting. Now, I'm going to put some links to materials in the description below. In particular, we've got the Linktree account that has a lot of other information. So I hope that you did find this information useful. If you want to learn more about just revocable trust planning and the basics of estate planning and avoiding probate, Estate Planning Basics is the book that I put out. And so, again, there's links regarding that in the description below. And again, we hope you got some really good information out of that. So I'd just like to say thank you. Stay safe, plan ahead, and enjoy life.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Plain English Attorney Podcast, and we hope you found this session interesting and informative. For more information, please check out the links in the description, and please let us know if you have any ideas for future podcasts.